Kia ora and welcome to our Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. We are a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join me in the studio to talk about our center, the Mercy Sisters, or about programs or about social justice. Today, my visitor is Sister Catherine Wilds Pickett. Sister Catherine, a warm welcome and hi to my radio program.
Kia ora, Beate, lovely to be here with you this morning. So thank you for this invitation.
Thank you for coming. Sister Catherine is a Sister of Mercy who has worked in Catholic primary schools for many years. She then was religious education advisor for primary schools in the Auckland Diocese. Sister Catherine is one of our spiritual directors at the Mercy Spirituality Center and has a particular focus on facilitating the understanding and practice of meditation in one's life. She also leads a weekly evening meditation group on Mondays and day retreats through the year. Apart from her involvement in our Mercy Spirituality Center, Sister Catherine works in the Tribunal Office of a Catholic Church in New Zealand. Sister Catherine, you were trained as a primary school teacher and now you're working at the Tribunal Office. Did you choose this change or were you asked to work for the Tribunal?
Well, Beate, I was asked to work for the Tribunal, but to be honest, it came as a surprise, or probably say shock, really, that I should end up working in the Tribunal. I was in between ministries and at this time was discerning the possibilities of some new pastoral ministry. And at that time I was approached by the Associate Judicial Vicar. He said to me, Catherine, we've got a job for you if you would like to accept it, this position. And I said to him, well, can you explain what it's about? Because at that time, looking as an outsider, I knew very little about the Tribunal. I saw it as a legalistic, hierarchical, patriarchal kind of structure. And so I said to him, well, can you give me a week to think about it and pray about it, really? And also I would need to speak with my congregational leader at the time. So he said, fine, you know, you just come back to me. So I really did that. I spent time really praying and thinking. And I thought, well, perhaps I could present a feminine image of God and a feminine image of the church. And it was from that point that I was able to say yes to this invitation. I sort of felt that it was a door which I wasn't expecting to be opened for me, but it was at that time. And so now, 15 years later, I have found it to be a very pastoral ministry, and it's been a privilege to be working in this ministry of the church.
And you're a Sister of Mercy and you've never been married. How do people react when they come to meet you and you and maybe a priest who works in the Tribunal Office?
Well, as I say, prior to my working in the Tribunal Office, that was a question I often asked myself as well, as I would go past this office and see all these priests and religious working there. But having come into the job, I've discovered that I've never experienced any negative reaction from people coming to me. They know that I'm a Sister of Mercy. They know there are the priests who work here. But I'm aware that when people do come to the Tribunal, they feel very apprehensive about approaching us. But I endeavour to help them feel welcome. I try to put them at their ease, and I assure them that we're here to support and to help them. And I think it's when they see that I'm respecting the dignity of that person, a sort of a trust is established, and people will open up and feel quite comfortable. And while it's difficult, they're ready to share their story.
And has your background as a trained spiritual companion been a reason why they chose you for this sensitive ministry?
Well, no. At the time when I was asked to work in the Tribunal, I wasn't even trained as a spiritual director in those days. I began working in the Tribunal in 1999. And in some ways, I was thrown at the deep end. I learned by observing the person who was training me. time, I would have done what we call initial interviews. I wasn't doing cases as such, but I was helping people prepare their case for, you know, preparing their application and explaining what the process was. So, and then 2002, I was appointed as an auditor, which means that at that time, because of my training that I had up to that point, I was able to do interviews, individual interviews for a case. But then in 2003, 2004, I did what they call the Institute of Tribunal Practice, and that's, as I say, a two-year program, a study program. We had to go over to Australia and attend lectures and things and do assignments throughout the year. And after that, then I was appointed as a case instructor, which meant that I could take a case from the beginning right through to the process of interviews and so on, up to the point where it's then handed to the judges.
And what are the main tasks of the tribunal office? Now, you mentioned already some of the tasks that you were doing. Can you tell me some of the main tasks?
The tribunal office deals with a variety of church issues or matters. It provides guidelines relating to the church and the rights and obligations of the people of God. So, for example, there are rules and regulations about the priestly life and religious life. It deals with any issues of violation, like, for example, defamation, property matters that relate, you know, for the diocese mm-hmm. or the church, and, of course, the teaching and sacramental life of the church. And, of course, the church also deals with marriage cases. So my work in the tribunal is really only concerned with people who are divorced or have been through a dissolution, as we call it, and they want to remarry again in the Catholic Church according to the canonical form. People who have been through a divorce or a dissolution, I just want to explain about dissolution. In 1980, the Family Proceedings Act was established, and that meant that there was a no-fault law. Before, you had to go to court and prove that someone had been unfaithful or whatever. But then in 1990, the dissolution order was established, and that meant there was no requirement to present to court. It just had to be there was a reconcilable relationship and a two-year separation. So now in New Zealand, we talk about dissolution. So I listen to their stories, which are often painful. They're similar stories, but they're painful. But helping people work through this judicial process is very much a pastoral ministry. I just want to go back. When I say the stories are painful and that, just going back to my experience as a spiritual director or companion, you know, I've done that training. And I would say that my background in the tribunal certainly provided a sound basis for spiritual direction. Mm-hmm. But likewise, the spiritual companioning, the studies that I did for that, I felt really enhanced the work that I do in the tribunal office. You know,
they're complementary.
They're complementary. They're very different ministries. But there's similar skills that are required. So there's that listening, that's being attentive to the person who's there sitting in front of you. But there are different reasons for being with that person. So in the tribunal, when I do the interviews for there, I kind of know what kind of facts I'm looking for. It's fact-finding. Whereas with spiritual companioning, it's the person who comes to me who sets the agenda. I've got no agenda. I'm just there to meet that person. Again, I listen. I might reflect back what a person is saying just so that they can perhaps hear it and it touches them a little bit more deeply. Sometimes challenge, but certainly encourage. Mm-hmm. So there's complementary but different ways of being with people in the tribunal that I meet in the tribunal and people I meet through spiritual companioning. Going back to the work of the tribunal office, it's also, it's an advisory court for the bishops as well, you know. And so canon law is there really to protect and enable things to happen in the right way. So, if we think about, say, the traffic laws, imagine the chaos in Auckland if we had no traffic lights. It would be just, and all the men, the police and things would have to be involved to control that. Well, traffic laws are there to protect and enable people to get to wherever they want.
To have a chance to get going.
To get going, that's right. So canon law is there to also to protect and to enable things to happen in right ways.
The office you work for is called Tribunal Office of the Catholic Church for New Zealand. This sounds as if it was a national office, but yet every diocese has its tribunal office. Do they all work as one body with different branches?
Yes, we are a national office here in New Zealand. Archbishop John Dew in Wellington, he's the moderator of the Tribunal of the Catholic Church for New Zealand, and we have offices in each diocese. So that's Wellington, Christchurch, Palmerston North, Auckland, Hamilton. Mm-hmm. I think I've named them all.
Six dioceses.
And the Canon Law Council, it has what we call a judicial vicar for the country. So there's one person appointed for that. And then there's what we call the associate judicial vicar in each diocese. And then within the offices working, we have case instructors like what I am. And in our office, we've got three case instructors. And we also have auditors. They're people who do help with interviews. In Auckland and in Hamilton as well, we have people what we call field auditors. So they're people that don't work in the office itself, but they're out there and doing and helping us with interviews. That's so that we in the office don't have to keep travelling around the diocese to do these interviews. Yes. But we work for the people within our diocese. And but of course we do seek the assistance of personnel in other offices. So for example, I might be doing a case here in Auckland and there's somebody, a witness who needs to be interviewed who lives in Wellington or Christchurch, whatever. We work, someone from that office will then interview them for us. So there's very much the
cooperation.
Yeah. And that's, yes.
For those of you who've just tuned in, you're listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Epsom. If you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/muffintalk or send me an email at muffintalk840@gmail.com. My visitor today is Sister Catherine Wiles Pickett. Sister Catherine is a Sister of Mercy and she works at the Tribunal Office of the Catholic Church in New Zealand. She told us about how she came to work for the tribunal and what the tasks of this office were. Catherine, before you started talking about marriage annulment, I think that it would be good to know how marriage is defined according to the Catholic Church. Could you give us some examples of what makes a marriage a valid marriage according to canon law?
Well, the Catholic Church believes that marriage is a lifetime exclusive partnership between a man and a woman. And so when Catholics and Eastern Orthodox Christians marry according to the requirements of their churches, or when other people of other religions marry according to the requirements of civil law, the Catholic Church presumes that they have married validly. You know, so all marriages are valid. And when we quote canon law, like canon law, canon 1055, it says that marriage is a covenant. It's not just a contract.
Yes.
Marriage is a covenant by which a man and a woman establish between themselves a partnership of their whole life, and which the spouses of its nature is ordered. It's ordered for the well-being of the spouses and to the procreation and upbringing of children. There's two elements. And in the Catholic Church, for marriage between baptized people, that's been raised to the dignity of a sacrament. So that's sort of what canon law says what marriage is. But it's consent that makes the marriage. And for the Catholic Church, there are basic elements that must be present for that consent to make it a valid marriage. For as I said, it's a partnership of life and love. It's exclusive. It's a man and a woman. It's also about a commitment of faithfulness to each other for life. It's a marriage that's open to the possibility of children. And it's a covenant, it's a partnership that's lasting until the death of one's partner. So they're the basic elements that are necessary for a marriage to be valid from a Catholic Church point of view. But of course, we know in our society there's very much a divorce mentality. So like if a couple going into marriage hoping that it's going to last, that really falls short of intending the marriage to last. So that in a marriage to be valid, the couple, both partners intend and making this commitment. They have an understanding what marriage is, and they're wanting to make this commitment for life to each other.
And what happens if any of these basic elements is lacking from the beginning, but the couple would like the marriage to be really valid?
Well, can I just say again, as I say, the Church teaches that all marriages are valid unless there are grounds which may indicate otherwise. But also, the Church does recognise that divorce happens, and so therefore it seeks to minister to divorced people. So the two main reasons why a person might approach the tribunal office is that they've been through a civil dissolution of a previous marriage, and they now wish to marry another person in the Catholic Church. Now, so that's the main reason why a person would come. We don't have couples coming to the marriage and saying, well, this wasn't there, but my marriage is still valid. Mm-hmm. Well, yes, your marriage is valid unless, as I say, we go through this process of, and there has to be a reason. You're wanting to, you've been divorced, you've had a civil dissolution, and you're wanting to marry again. That's the main reason why people come to us. From time to time, though, I've had people, and they might be more senior people, and I listen to their story and I say, well, are you intending to get married again? And they might say, oh no, I'm never going to get married. And I say, why are you coming to us to seek an annulment of your marriage? And I'm checking out really that they know that even though they're divorced, they're still a full member of the Catholic Church. They can still participate in the sacraments of the Church. So I'm just checking that they understand that. And if they do, they say, no, I'm approaching you because I realise I've been through a civil part of the marriage, but there's also been a Church aspect of it, and this is to bring complete closure. They just want to, they feel for themselves, they have to do this to bring complete closure to what might have been a traumatic and a very painful experience for them.
So you mentioned already a little bit of how you're proceeding. So how does the tribunal office proceed in order to find out if a marriage can be declared as invalidly contracted?
Well, for the declaration of invalidity, the Church law requires proof beyond simply the word of the person who has approached us. So we listen to that person's story first of all, but then we have to have statements, well, we endeavour to have statements from both parties. So we try to make contact with the what we call the respondent, the person who has approached us, the plaintiff. We then try to make contact with the respondent and recognising their rights that to tell the story from their perspective. So there's those two parties. We also need the testimony of other witnesses. So it's the collective evidence that helps us to know what the truth is.
And what happens if one partner doesn't agree with an annulment?
Well, a decision, it can be challenged by either of the parties, so they can appeal if they don't agree. But when we have the plaintiff coming, normally they're the ones who agree that there are grounds. It's the respondent who may disagree. Mm.
Yes.
But the grounds are explained to them. They asked if they agree or disagree. They can appeal. Yes.
I understand that the annulment process refers mainly to the conditions under which a marriage was contracted. That's what you explained. But what happens if one partner changes drastically during the marriage?
I know the marriage vows do say for better or for worse, and sometimes patterns of behaviour are not manifested until later in marriage. So in cases like that, occasionally we seek the assistance of marriage counsellors, psychologists, sometimes medical doctors and other professionals who help us in establishing evidence which would point to, say, the incapacity of a person to take on a life commitment. So it's quite an intensive kind of investigation, really. Sometimes parties present medical or police records which support evidence that what a person's given, which shows that the other was not capable of carrying out some of the core responsibilities of marriage. Or that person may have really even lacked the ability to properly understand the nature and responsibilities of marriage. So we're talking about, within marriage, a couple, we say, giving themselves in love and respect as a partnership. But what evolves within the marriage itself, it shows that a partner is disregarding the well-being of the other.
Mm-hmm. So how long does this annulment process usually take? Because you have to consider so many different points.
Well, it is quite a long process, and depending on what is required. When the people come to me first, I need to say, look, this can take 10, 11 months, sometimes longer.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just add, though, that there are different processes which we use, but I don't want to go into that now.
Yeah.
But when we're talking about the full process of nullity, it can take 10, 11 months.
Yeah.
Because we're working not just within the Auckland Diocese. Sometimes we're having to have people interviewed in other parts of the country, but also internationally.
Yeah.
Like some of the countries I've dealt with was Poland and England, Philippines, yeah, and so on.
Many people say that the annulment is only for the wealthy. Is that true?
That's what some people think, yes. Admittedly, it is quite a cost. This fee has been set by the Bishops' Conference, and we have to work with that. But this payment is negotiated. When the people first come, approach the tribunal and they're meeting with me, and I've got a sense of their situation, their financial, you know, situation, I tell them what the cost is, but I say, look, what is possible for you? You know, so people can pay in instalments, weekly, monthly, or
so you
or
support
whatever.
Them. For
so
them.
We support them, and we do have the policy. Look, I say, I don't want you to go out the door and saying it's too expensive. You know, so we make it what's possible for them.
And once your office has decided to agree in a marriage annulment, does this decision has to be confirmed by the Vatican?
No, very, okay, very few cases go to Rome. Yes.
And is the introduction of the tribunal a result of the changes that came through Vatican II?
Well, no, not really. There's always been a tribunal for the judicial function of the church. But the first time that the canon law or the church laws were put together in one book was 1917. But then in 1983, the canon law code was updated, and that was by the influence of the changes of Vatican II. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And do you think that our Pope Francis and his Council of Eight Cardinals will make the process of the annulment easier?
Well, in some ways, this has got nothing to do with the Eight Cardinals. But Pope Francis made it clear after the recent synod that he wants the procedures to be simplified. But how we're going to achieve this at this point, we don't know. But
we'll have to wait from news from the Vatican.
Right.
Do you think that the Catholics in general are well informed about the possibility and challenges of marriage annulment?
I think there's a lot of misinformation out there. So no, they're not informed. And that would be because of the confidential nature of our work. We don't talk about it much. But now, today, with the internet, people are accessing information through there. And it's often, when I say to people, how did you know to come to us? Oh, I read it about it on the internet. So there is more information out there. But one thing which I will, an example of not understanding, many people say, well, if I get an annulment, does that mean our children are illegitimate? And certainly no, no, because there's been the civil law has said they're married, so it doesn't affect. Annulment doesn't affect the legitimacy of children.
Yeah. So that must be a relief for the people.
Yes, yes.
And, how do people get in touch with you? You said they know about the tribunal via internet, but how do they practically get in touch with you? Do they give you a ring or do they come to the office?
Well, sometimes people are referred, they might have gone to their parish priest and their priest has suggested, look, you go and speak to Sister Catherine at the tribunal office. And so they'll give them my phone number. So if there's anybody who's listening to this on radio and think, well, maybe the church might be able to help me, my phone number at Pompalia Diocesan Centre is 09, of course, 360-3030. And my days at the tribunal are Monday to Thursday, 8:30 till 4:00.
That's very good to know. And for the listeners who didn't have the time to write it down, you can always get in touch with us through the Mercy Spirituality Center, and we'll put you in touch with Sister Catherine. And our phone number is 09638-6238, and our website is www.mercyspiritualitycenter.org.nz. Thank you very much for this interview, Sister Catherine. It was really very, very, I really enjoyed it. And I think that there's too many questions that are open for many Catholics, and they don't dare to ask, or they don't know whom to ask. So I think that it's great to have you had you here, and thank you very much.
Yes. Thank you, Beate, for this opportunity.
And I'd like to draw the attention to some of our upcoming events in the Mercy Spirituality Center in Epsom. We have on Friday, 21st of November, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., a retreat day with Andrew Pritchard with the title In Seeing, a day for nourishing the hungry heart through contemplative engagement with creation and creativity. And Saturday, 22nd of November, a repeat of the workshop Spirituality and Social Justice with Stephen Stolstrup. This is a workshop which is especially useful for those who work in social justice and need to take a day out from their demanding ministry. It will take place from 9:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Booking is essential. And Wednesday, 3rd of December, we'll have an Advent retreat in the evening, 7 to 9 p.m., with Sister Helen Bergen, with the topic God is Always Coming. And if you have any questions or want to have a retreat or Christian meditation, come and join us at Mercy Spirituality Center in Epsom, or check out the website www.mercyspiritualitycenter.org.nz. And if you miss any of our programs on the radio, have a look at planetaudio.org.nz/muffintalk. Thank you all, and have a blessed Friday and a good week. Thank you.